Last time we went, again, we were still a little bit off the daf, but we were explaining the Shitas HaRambam and the Maariz Chayes's defense of the Rambam from the attacks of the Chavos Ya'ir. So now I just want to get into the sugyas a little bit. So we started to discuss the issue of, we mentioned very quickly at the end, the Kapos Tamarim's Kasha, that how could the Gemara even have a Havamina to suggest that Esrog means Pilpulin, it can't possibly mean Pilpulin if there's a Halacha L'moshe Misinai, that the shear of an Esrog HaKatan, that the small size of an Esrog, is either Ke'egos or Kebetza, and you'll never see a Pilpulin in your life that's the size of Ke'egos or Kebetza. So we went through the Kapos Tamarim's answer and the Aruch Liner's two answers, but we point out the Aruch Liner's second answer, the primary one that I was looking for, was that based on the Shita of the Rambam, that the whole discussion, the Gemara is not really a discussion. The Gemara is not entertaining the possibility that Pri Etz Hadar means anything but an Esrog. The way the Gemara is working it out is that the Gemara is saying that we know Perish HaMakubal L'moshe Misinai, Pri Etz Hadar means an Esrog. Elamai, with a Perish HaMakubal, what you're then allowed to do is work backwards and try to find a hint, a remez, somewhere in the Pasuk, to that Perish HaMakubal. That's all the Gemara was trying to do. Figure out which is the best hint and which is not the best hint. So say, Eitz HaPir Yoshav is not the best hint because other candidates would exist for that qualification also. So it's not the best hint. But the Gemara never possibly entertained that Pri Etz Hadar means Pilpulin. Just one thing I wanted to make clear, I'm not sure if I was 100% clear last time, and that is why this Rambam is made such a huge deal out of. Why people think that this Rambam is like the most important Rambam, you know, and that, you know, when you go up to the Bechina after 120 years, that this is going to be the first question that they ask you, you know, about this Rambam. This Rambam serves as the backbone of our Emunah and Torah Shebal Peh. For at least in the Rambam's view, this is the backbone of our Emunah and Torah Shebal Peh. Because as I mentioned to you last time, when you open up a Gemara, it could be a major shot to your Emunah and Torah Shebal Peh. Because you see that Rav and Abaye couldn't get anything straight, Rav and Rav Yosef couldn't get anything straight, Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish couldn't get anything straight, Ramei Rabbi Yehuda, no one is ever able to get along with each other to agree with each other what the Torah says. So how do I know that when they tell me anything, that they got it straight? Everything was messed up somewhere along the transmission. What the Rambam's Yisod is that nothing was messed up. That not a single ounce was messed up. Meaning, the Rambam holds as follows, that the raya to that is, Halacha L'moshe Misinai, and Perish HaMakubal L'moshe Misinai. Those things that were given to Moshe directly at Har Sinai were never lost, no one ever argued on them. There was never a weakness in our transmission of the Masorah. And that's why you never have anyone who says Ayin Tachas Ayin means anything but money. You never have anybody that says V'katosas Kappa means anything but money. You never have anyone that says Pri Etz Hadar means anything but an Esrog. You never have anyone that says Anaf Etz Avos means anything but Hadassim. You never have any machlokas in these types of areas. Where do you have machlokas? Within the Yud Gimel Nidush HaTorah and Drash Ben. Why? Isn't that a weakness in our Masorah? So the way the Rambam understands it is that's not a weakness in our Masorah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave certain things directly to Moshe, and certain things he said, okay, here are the rules. There are Yud Gimel Nidush, these are the rules, here's the Torah Shebichtav, go figure it out. And as long as you're working within that system and you're figuring out, you know, based on those 13 rules, the Yud Gimel Nidush HaTorah and Drash Ben, what the Torah Shebichtav means, as long as you're within that system, we apply the concept of Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. That's all part of Torah. It's not that one is and one isn't. That's all part of Torah. That's why all these machlokesim, Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. We don't say Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chayim on a Perush HaMakubal, because Moshe only, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only said to Moshe one thing in the Perush HaMakubal. He only said Pri Etz Hadar means one thing. But when it comes to all the other dinim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say Tamei Torah, this, that. He said 13 rules. Figure it out. Anytime you're using those 13 rules and you're figuring it out, honestly, you're within the domain of Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And that's what the Maariz Chayes made a big point of saying, that when Boaz gets up and he says, Amoni v'lo amon, kach mekublani mi beis dino shel Shmuel HaRamasi, Amoni v'lo amonas Moav v'lo Moavas. When he makes that declaration, that's it, it is Kabbalah, that it's Amoni v'lo amonas, if you're going to argue on that, it's not Talmud Torah to argue on it. You're no longer within the world of Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. It's not even a kiyum of Talmud Torah. You're now outside of Torah. That's why this Rambam is such a big deal, and that's why you should never forget this Rambam. Okay, now let's move on to other exciting things like Pilpulin. So, says the Gemara had mentioned, as an aside, that Pilpulin are Chayiv and Arla. How do I know Pilpulin are Chayiv and Arla? What are Pilpulin? peppercorns. Peppercorns, I think those are little bullies, right? Those are they're little teeny little things. So piplin or chayven arla. How do I know? Because minayin. How do I know? Because it says eitz shetam eitz tam lomer eitz machol. It says in the Tatum Kaleitz, why does it have to say Eitz Machol? So Eitz Shetam Eitz Opir Yeshavet. It must be telling me that it has to be the same time for the Eitz and the Pri. Zeh Pilpulin, Lam Dechashah Pilpulin Chayavin Ba'arla. So if you're going to need a drusha to tell me that Pilpulin are Chayavin Arla, there must be a Havamina to think Pilpulin are not Chayavin Arla. So that's the question that Rishonim grapple with. What would have been the Havamina that Pilpulin are not Chayavin Arla? So says Rashi, what's the Havamina that Pilpulin are not Chayavin Arla? Delo Tema, in the third line of Rashi, Delo Tema min Yereku. Don't think it's a vegetable. Why would you think it's a vegetable? Vipneshu eitz shafel kmin rotam she'eno kavoa min aretz. Because it's very low. It grows low to the ground. So you might have thought it's a vegetable. So lest you think it's a vegetable, you need a special pasuk to come and teach me that it's not a vegetable, that it's a fruit. And therefore, it is chayv in arla. Now Tosos takes issue with that Rashi. Just happens to be, it's interesting that Tosos, the second half of Tosos on totally different issue, not about what the Havamina would have been. The second half of Tosfos, let me just do that first and get it out of the way first. The second half of Tosfos deals with the Gemara says that you see from this pasuk that what's chayiv in arla, things that are tam eitzo upiri yoshave. So must be teaching me pilpul in a chayiv in arla. Now, when it comes to esrog, we say, how do I know tam eitzo upiri yoshave is esrog? Maybe it's pilpul. But when it comes to arla, we just say matter of factly, oh, Pilpulin archive, when it tells me Tam Eitzo Peri Yeshava, it must be teaching me Pilpulin archive in Arla. The Gemara never says, no, maybe it's not teaching me Pilpulin archive in Arla, maybe it's telling me Esrog is Chayv in Arla. Esrog is also Tam Eitzo Peri Yeshava. On the flip side, when we're talking about Esrog, we say, oh, maybe it's Pilpulin. When we talk about Arla, how come we don't say maybe it's Esrog? Or, Tosfos says, not only Esrog, Tiltan, Fenugreek, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, it's one of the Simanim that we have. Or don't have, but you know, it's in the Siddur, it's in the Machzor, fenugreek that you have on Rosh Hashanah. That's also Tam Eitzo Upir Yoshave. So maybe it's teaching me that fenugreek is Chayv in Arla. So Tosfos says, no, it can't be teaching me Esrog and it can't be teaching me fenugreek. One, because it's obviously, one of those items is obviously Chayv in Arla, and the other is obviously not Chayv in Arla. It's not on the line. Esrog is obviously Chayv in Arla. It's a tree. There's no Havamina to say it's not. I don't need a special pasuk to tell me Tam Eitzo Peri Yeshava to teach me that an Esrog is Chayv in Arla. Just tell me the din of Arla by any tree, and I don't know, Esrog is Chayv in Arla. So it can't be that the pasuk is coming to tell me Esrog. Tiltan also, can't be that it's coming to tell me Tiltan. Because Tiltan also I already know is Chayv in Arla. I mean, Tiltan I know is Pat from Arla, because Tiltan is Pashut, not a tree. What's the good Zroim Yedios over here in this Tosos? What's the raya that I know Pashut that Tiltan is not a tree? Because Tiltan is subject to the Isra of Kilei Akerem. What's the Isra of Kilei Akerem? When you have grapes planted too close to something else. To what? To either grain or vegetables. It creates a problem of Kilei Akerem. The mixture is Asrbana. You have grapes planted too closely to trees. No such thing. It's not Kilei Akerem. The fact that Tiltan, we have a Mishnah that tells us that Tiltan makes Kilei Akerem, Tiltan and grapes close to each other makes Kilei Akerem, shows you Pashut, Tiltan is not a fruit, it's a vegetable. If it's a vegetable, it's not going to be Chayv in Arla. So Tiltan is obviously not Chayv in Arla, Esrog obviously is Chayv in Arla, and therefore the only thing that this Pasuk could be teaching me about Chayv Arla must be about pilpulin, about peppercorns. Good? So what's the Havamina of the peppercorns? Wouldn't it be Chayv in Arla? Number one, Shitas Rashi. Rashi says the Havamina is, since it's so low, we would assume that it's not a tree. Says Tosfos, that's ridiculous. There are lots of small trees. Small trees doesn't make something not Chayv in Arla. He says, Delo b'hachi tal yamilsa. Whoever told you to define a tree by how tall it is? You never define a tree by how tall it is. V'kame etzim shvelim heim, sheish lam toras ilan. There are a lot of very low trees that have a din of a tree. So it can't be the din of a tree. That can't be what it is. So says Tosfos, what's the answer then? And this is a hard read, the answer of Tosfos. Because, let's see it. Last wide line of Tosfos. Elahainu taima. What's the reason I'd have a havamin of the pilpul and not chayv in arla? Yishum daminim perek basra diyuma. Because the Gemara in the last perek of Masechus Yuma, deals with what? Anyone know? Last perek, what does most of Masechus Yuma deal with? Olam Masechus Yuma pretty much deals with Avodas Yom Kippurim, right? Last parak is what deals with what we know, the Chamesh Inuyim, the things you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. But the first seven prakim of Masechus Yuma are all about things that we have no shaychus to anymore, the Avodas Yom Kippurim, which I always use that as like, you know, a reminder to myself of just how much we're missing when we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. You think, okay, so we still have so much Jewish life. We're just missing that one thing. We're just missing the Beis HaMikdash. No, we don't know what Yom Kippur means without a Beis HaMikdash. 7/8 of what Yom Kippur means, we don't have anymore. We think it's like this amazing experience, Yom Kippur. We're missing the whole thing without the Beis HaMikdash. Pesach also. Learn Mesechus Pesachim, right? The majority of the Mesechta is about stuff that we don't do anymore. It's about the Karban Pesach. The whole experience of Pesach, you know, walking knee-deep in blood in the Azara and every family bringing their little sheep and everyone going all the regular. Pesach is a great experience for us, but it's not what it's supposed to be. We're missing a lot when we miss the Beis. Something to think about in Tisha B'Av. We're missing a lot when we miss the Beis HaMikdash. We're missing our whole Jewish experience. So anyway, so says Tosfos, it says in the end of Yuma, when it talks about the Isser of eating on Yom Kippur, so it says, Kas palpuli b'yom ha'kippuri pater. If you're so inclined to chew peppercorns on Yom Kippur, you're pater. It's not called eating. So the Gemara asks, Pilpon ha'chayavim arla, how could you say it's not called eating? It's a fruit. So it's eating a fruit when you're chewing on pilpon. Are you allowed to chew on an apple? Definitely not. So why should you be, even if you spit it out, so why should you be allowed to chew on pilpulin? Umeshani habiruti vasa habi abeshta. He says, big difference. When it's moist, it's a fruit. When it's dry, it's not a fruit. So when it's dry, you're allowed to chew on it in Yom Kippur. When it's moist, you're not allowed to chew on it in Yom Kippur, because then it's really a fruit. So therefore, says, now I understand what the havamina is, why pilpulin should be pata from arla. V'salka daitach kivan desofa liyavesh afilu ruti vasa paturin. I might think that since it will dry, therefore, even when it's moist, it's pater from arla. Come mashmalan that it's chayiv in arla when it's moist. Is it chayiv in arla when it's dry? Yeah, what's Tosfos saying? Because the Gemara says on Yom Kippur, when it's dry, it's not eating. When it's moist, it is eating. So I'd have a hava mina that even when it's moist, even when it's moist, it's not chayiv in arla. Because it will dry eventually. That would be my havamina. Kamash malon, that's not true. Whenever you have a kamash malon, you have to ask yourself, so what is true? I know it's not true that when it's moist, it's pata from arla. Good. So I know it is true that when it's moist, it's chayiv in arla. That for sure is a minimum what the kamash malon is telling me. Is it also telling me that even after it dries out, it's still chayiv in arla? Does the chayiv of arla go away when it dries up? Can the chiv of arla disappear from something? So what do you think? What do you dina? Anything to compare it to? No, you don't have to compare it to something. Even the svara.
The apologize that it was the first way that one is that just because it's eventually going to dry, the question is going on the moist. You would have thought the moist.
But when it's dry, it's for sure not chayv in arla, you're saying. So a fruit that would be. So there are two ways to take care of arla. One is burn it. The other is just wait. Wait till it dries.
For
pilpulin, obviously, like for apples, you'll have dried apples, that's still edible. But for pilpulin, that would take care, that would be the biur of the arla. Are you allowed to choose that second path? So that would be telling whether there's a mitzvah sreifa of arla. But you say, if you do choose, then it would be okay. Okay, that's a possibility. What if you burn arla? Can you use the ashes or the wood or the coals that are created from burnt arla? Arla is asbana. So the chorot should be totally in the same issue. Maybe. let's go through the steps. If I take arla and I burn it, and now I have hot coals, let's assume that somehow it makes hot coals after I burn it. So can I bake bread on those hot coals? It's already burnt, the arla is gone. So pashtus is yes. So then you can say, okay, well, then pilpulin also. Once it dries out, it's no longer food. It's no longer what it was, and therefore it's not arla anymore. It should be totally mutter. I should be able to do whatever I want with it. It's not arla anymore. Big difference between the two cases, though. Anyone want to take a stab at what the difference is between the two cases? When I burn arla, assuming that there's a mitzvah to destroy arla, so you have a svara the Gemara uses called nasis mitzvasa, that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you that something's aser, and this is how you need to address it, and you've done your job, well, then you've taken care of the iser because you've done your job. You had a mitzvah to burn it, you burnt it, you've done what you were supposed to do. And therefore, it can't be aser anymore. But if I just, it dried, which means I neglected it, I didn't do anything, I didn't destroy it, I didn't do my mitzvah of sreifa, it just dried out after a while. I haven't done my job, I haven't done anything. So if I haven't done my job, so then maybe it still retains some remnant of arla. Yeah.
Isn't that with like the dichay etzel mitzvos, like with the covering of the blood? Right?
So like, you want to say this tali in dichay etzel mitzvos, that it's no longer...
Like if the wind covers it, like it covers the blood and then it uncovers it, like you haven't done the action of covering it, so like the bets and like the mitzvah is still there to do, but... If you did it and then it uncovered, then you don't have to do it.
Ah, similar idea. Right. So once you've done your mitzvah, exactly. Right, that's where you have it. That once you've done your mitzvah, you no longer have any responsibilities to it. Or you could say that, no, the cheftz is mufka from arla. That once it becomes dry, it's not peros. Arla is for peros. It's not for dried out little hard balls of something, right? It's just not subject to arla. So let's see as we go a little bit further. Sfasemis, very interesting sfasemis over here that discusses... this issue. It's source number 9. He quotes Tosos' disagreement with Rashi, and then he tries to defend Rashi at the beginning. Again, Rashi said it all depends on how close it is to the ground. That since it's so close to the ground, I might have thought that that's why it's not chayv narla. Says Tosos, the laf haikrad the mabra pilpul and ena chenem kavisal kadayf leitz shavu laf prihu umelachud yalfinish sheisham toras ilan. First, Fasema says, what's Tosis Kasha on Rashi? It's too hot to sit. I'm sorry. What's Tosis Kasha on Rashi? What's Tosis Kasha on Rashi? The Kasha is, I don't understand how you can say that something that's low to the ground, you'd have a Havamina that it's not subject to Arla because it's low. So says Fasema, why? Why don't I understand that you could have such a Havamina? Because we have so many different things that are low to the ground and that are really trees, that have a din of a tree. Right? That's Tosis' point. Says Fasema, how do you know those things have a din of a tree? Who told you things that are low to the ground have a din of a tree? It's all from here! It's from this drasha! The Gemara says, Pilpul or Chayv and Arla. Why would I think they're not? Because they're very low to the ground. But once it's Megala to me, that it's Chayv and Arla, it's not just telling me that this thing is Chayv and Arla, it's telling me this type of thing is Chayv and Arla. It's telling me that even Pilpul, even though they're low to the ground, and therefore anything else that's also low to the ground, could still be Chayv and Arla. This is the source for it. It's a chicken and egg issue. It's also say, oh, we already know other little things. Well, how do you know? You know it from here, says Fasemes. So he says Tosos must have realized that. Tosos must have realized that. He must be asking different. What he must be asking is that if that's the case, that this is the source for all low trees being chayv and arla, what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, l'lamdecha shapilpul in chayav and ba'arla. The Gemara should have said, if this is the source for so many other things besides for just peppercorns, it should have said other things besides for just peppercorns. It doesn't. Mela. This can't be the source. That must be what Tosfos's problem is. But he says, I got a kasha on Tosfos. Yesh l'tmah pirusha Tosfos. What does Tosfos say? That because one day it's going to dry out, so I might think that since eventually it's going to dry out and it's not going to be a fruit, that right now we should already say it's not chayev and arla. That's the Havamin and Tosfos' mind. So he says, mashma desvirile ledina to be a veshta lesbe isra arla. Meaning, Sfasemis understands Tosfos the way Ari understood Tosfos. That if you were to ask Tosfos a dry pilpulin, is it chayev and arla or not? Tosfos will tell you no. It's just like a dry pilpulin, you can eat it on Yom Kippur, it's not chayev and arla even. The Tosfos holds, once it's dry, it's not chayv and arla. But he says, that's weird. That's svara tumul, v'yani is taiti. Such a strange svara. Mein nafka minali inyan arla, mashin is yavshu. Once it's dried out, why does that make a difference for arla? He says, for Yom Kippur, I get it. Why does it make a difference if it's dry or moist for Yom Kippur purposes? What do you think? Why does it make a difference?
It tastes better.
It's eating. If I take a piece of wood from the ground and I chew on it, that's not eating. That's just chewing on something. This discussion is, can you chew gum in Yom Kippur, by the way? Pre-chewed gum. Yeah. Or it's a, let's say, one of the Jewish brands of gum, the kosher brand. So it's chewed for 30 seconds. So there's no flavor in it anymore. So pre-chewed gum. Can you chew it on Yom Kippur? I'm just chewing on something. Gum base is rubber. So am I allowed to chew on it? So anyway, okay, I shouldn't stay away from that halacha. But the difference between on Yom Kippur, between eating dry and moist things, it makes sense. When I'm eating something moist, I'm eating, I'm getting flavor. When I'm chewing on something dry, it's not eating. But by Arla, why should dry moist make a difference? Because by Arla, the Isra is not an Isra Chila, it's an Isra Hana. Hana means warming myself with it, rubbing it on my hands if it makes me feel good. I don't know, anything, using it as a stick ball bat, anything, a toothpick, anything, is an Isra of Arla. So to be mechalik between dry and moist by Yom Kippur makes plenty of sense. To be mechalik between dry and moist by Arlo says the Sfasemis makes no sense. So he says, I get where Tosus gets it from. Ivra de Pasha Soshna Gemara Sham Kanber Tivasa. When Tosus says, when the Gemara says in Yuma Kanber Tivasa Mash Makain, it implies that when it's moist it has a din of a pri, otherwise it doesn't. So he says that only on Yom Kippur should dry help you. When the Gemara says, oh, we're talking about moist pilpulin, what it means says as follows. Since when it's moist, it is a food, so there is a category, there is a time where pilpulin are a food, mela, it's always subject to arla. So basically he says, he doesn't read it in Tosos, he read Tosos the way Ari read it. He said, my reading of Tosos was totally wrong. I don't see why you can't read that into Tosos. Meaning again, what's he saying different than what Tosos said? He's saying that Tosos holds that when it comes to the chiyuv of arla, there's still a difference between moist and dry. That when it's moist, just like on Yom Kippur, it's only a problem of eating when it's moist, and it's not a problem of eating when it's dry. So to buy Arla, it's only subject to Arla when it's moist, not when it's dry. That's what Tosus says, in his view. But he's suggesting, and I think Tosus might be saying this also, that no, when it comes to Yom Kippur, if you eat it dry, it's okay. If you eat it moist, it's not okay. When it comes to Arla, I don't care whether you're eating it dry or moist. Since when it's moist, it's edible, that makes it a pri, and once it's a pri, it's always subject to arla. Even when it's dry, it's subject to arla because it's a pri. Granted, now it's dried out, and therefore it's ruined already. But guess what? Once it's subject to arla, it's us about us, so however you're going to use it, it's going to be a problem. So he says, look, Tosus doesn't say this. He doesn't think Tosus holds this way, but he says, you know, who does hold this way is the Rambam. Because he writes, the Rambam never quotes a chilik whether pilpulin are dry and moist in regards to arla. So he says, that explains why the Rambam doesn't make this chilik between dry and moist by arla. Because who says you should make such a chilik by arla? By arla, we're talking about hana. Only one problem. The Rambam doesn't say anything about pilpulin and arla. It's not that the Rambam says, oh, pilpulin are chayv and arla, but he just never mentions that it's only when they're moist. The Rambam leaves out the whole idea of pilpul chayav and arla. So that's a problem. And he sort of leaves that alone. He says, must be, you know, of course it's chayav and arla, it's a tree. Sarah Klamer, Kivan, the cause of Klal B'chali Lanos, Kol Gam Pilpulin. He said, trees are chayav and arla, so of course, pilpulin's a tree, of course. So the Ram doesn't bother mentioning it. Very, very strange. The Gemara thought, whatever the Hava Amina was to say it's not Chayv and Arla, whether you take Rashi or you take Tosos, there was some Hava Amina, and the Rambam thinks, ah, I told you trees, so of course, you'll hold Davar Pashut. But why does the Rambam not mechali between moist and dry? Because the Rambam disagrees with Tosos. That's how the Sfasemis sets it up. And I just wanted to tell you, I don't think that he disagrees with Tosos. I think you can read it into Tosos. I don't see where Tosos says that pilpulin, when they are dry, are not subject to Arla. He says, I might have thought that since they will dry, they're not subject to Arla. Kamash Malan. What's the Kamash Malan? That even though they will dry, it doesn't make a difference. They're chayv and arla all across the board when they're moist or when they're dry. That's the way I thought you could read the Tosfos. Now, so back up a step for the Rambam. The Rambam Shita, and again, I can't bring you a Rambam to prove the Shita because the point is the Rambam doesn't say anything. That's the problem with the Rambam. There's no Rambam we can look at to like try to be medayik. problem is the Rambam just doesn't say anything about billboard. So Sasseba says he doesn't say anything because he doesn't mechalik between yavesh and moist, and he just thinks that it's all tree, pilpulin is a tree, and it's obvious. Is that the best we could do for the Rambam, that the Rambam doesn't mention pilpulin? So the Kapos Tamarim, and in his Sefer Tosefos Yom Kippurim, he expounds on this a lot more, has a different view. He says, no, the Rambam doesn't leave this out because he thinks it's pashut. He leaves it out because he thinks it's wrong. He leaves it out because he thinks pilpulin are not chayv in Arla. Where does he get the idea pilpulin are not chayv in Arla? It's a Gemara. There's no cholik in our Gemara, no? The Gemara says, Hayer Rabbi Meir Omer, Imash Peshach, so good. It's Rabbi Meir, but we find anyone disagreeing with him. Meir says, in Tatum Kaleitz, and Yadei Shweitz Machel, Natal Meir Zvachel, Yishatam Yitzvah Yishava, Tzad pilpulin, Lamdach Hashem pilpulin chayv in Arla. No one's arguing. Why would the Rambam choose not to paskin this way? So says the Kapos Tamarim in the Sefer Tosefos Yom Kippurim in Yumadav Pei Aleph that the Rambam holds that Rav Meir is a das yachid, and he says the Rambam is teaching you a rule over here. When if it would have said Rav Meir Omer, then that's fine. Then it would be no cholek, and that's Rav Meir, and that's the sheet, and it's accepted. Hayer Rabbi Meir Omer tells you that there must that he was saying something new that other people disagreed with. I don't know of other examples in Shas where that comes up, where that's necessarily a proof that there's a machlokas, but that's what he says. Hayrav Meir Omer must mean that the Rambam understood that the Rabbanim disagree. And why did the Rabbanim disagree? So they hold that pilpulin are pater, because, now why would they be pater? What's the svar for pilpulin to be pater? So we have what to work with. We want to think of a svar. Again, up until now, what were we doing? We were saying, pilpulin are chayiv. What's the havamina? Why wouldn't they be chayiv? Now we're saying, according to the Rambam, pilpulin are pater. So you want to know, why does the Rambam say pilpulin are pater? A good place to start is, what the havamina is, why that they should be pater, according to Rav Meir. Why there's even a havamina otherwise? Start with Rashi and Tosfos. Right, so Rashi says, shachal, Tosfos says, let's stick with Tosfos. Now Tosfos says, the havamina is because it dries out. So I would think that it's part of Marl because it could dry out. So maybe that's Taka the Rabbanan's Maskana. That because it could dry out, it's part of Marl. Because when it dries out, it's no longer edible, it's part of Marl. What's that Machlokas about? Everyone agrees to Matthias. Pilplin, when it starts off, it's moist, and when you chew it, you'll get some flavor out of it. Everyone agrees that Pilplin ultimately dries out, probably fairly quickly. You then no longer get flavor out of it. Everyone agrees to that. According to the Rambam, Rav Meir sees that, Rav Meir says, oh, it's got to be chayv in Arla. And the way Tosfos reads it, right, everyone holds, got to be chayv in Arla. The Rambam sees that, and the Rambam says, no, it's pot from Arla. Only Rav Meir holds chayv, chum have to reject that, it's pot from Arla. What does something need to be chayv in Arla? What's the first qualification it needs to be chayv in Arla? It needs to be a pre. How do you define a fruit? Do you define a fruit by what it is right now? It's one possibility. In which case, Ari would have been right. That if it's moist, it's a fruit. If it's dry, it's not a fruit. Do you define a fruit by what its primary use is, what it's ultimately most of the time used for, let's put it that way, where it usually ends up, by majority usage. Majority usage of apples is that they get eaten as a fruit. Majority usage of pilpulin is that they dry out fairly quickly and they end up just being chewed on as like a gum base and not used as a fruit. Or do you define a fruit by not its majority usage, but its optimal usage? The best way to use it. The way that you can get the most out of it. What's the way to get the most out of pilpulin? Having it when it's moist, because then you actually enjoy the flavor. Those are all logical possibilities, right? You have what it is now, which is the way the Sfasemes and Ari read Tosfos. You have what the majority usage of it is, which is the way the Rambam understands the sheet of the Rabbanan. It's not a fruit because it always dries up and that's where it ends up. It ends up as a dry piece of wood. Or you have what its optimal usage is, which is to use it as a fruit. And that's how the Rambam understands Shittas Rav Meir. That's how the Sfas understands Shittas Rav Meir. That it's a fruit, when it's dry, moist, whatever, it is a fruit, because its optimal usage is as a fruit. That seems to me to be the machlokas. Yeah?
Has been the second way you said it again?
The majority usage.
The majority usage is going to dry up?
Yeah. Pilpulin apparently are things that, these little tiny things that dry very quickly, and every once in a while you'll chop it before it dries, but usually it's used like a gum base. That kind of thing, where it's, yeah.
For Esro, we don't really use it to eat, right? So
An Esro, well, lulei the mitzvah, if had we not had the mitzvah, yeah, you'd use it to eat.
Yeah, but
what else would you use it for? No,
like,
but
we don't use it to, don't
yeah, but it wouldn't be totally on that. Meaning, it would be totally on what it should be used had we not had the Torah telling us that we have some special responsibility. It would be like, what's an esrog used for now, like right now? Yeah.
So do these like three possibilities like play themselves out in like those brachos?
Ah, so.
In terms of like when a fruit changes form.
Good. Right, so a juicing orange, since it's grown, a juice is grown to make orange juice, so many poskim say you don't make a bar priya etz on an orange that's meant to be juiced. Unbelievable, right? Which svar does that sound like? That's what it's majority used for. Now, could I eat it? Yeah, it won't be nasty, it won't be terrible, but it's meant for that. That's what it's for. You know, if you have a cocoa bean, the cocoa beans are typically made to make chocolate. So, you know, it's different because it's meant to be mixed with different things. It's not just changed. It's not so pasha that chocolate's not ha'etz. Chocolate might be ha'etz if you have real chocolate, the disgusting kind. If you have the good kind, then, you know, with all the sugar and the milk, that's why we make shahakal, because we're making shahakal with the sugar and the milk, not with the cocoa. So that, maybe that's not a good example, because what changes it is the... But again, if its primary purpose is to be used for something else, if somehow they figured out how to take cocoa beans and turn them into fuel, you know, or something like that, you know, so would it have a din of cocoa? Would it have a din of something that's a pri at all? So this could be the machlokas and lamdas. I'd be interested to find if there are rayas. I haven't just sort of came to me, so I haven't really worked it through if there are rayas one way or the other. But that's what it seems to be that he's suggesting. Now, this is nogea. The Tosi Yom Kippurim brings this, connects this to other areas of halacha as well. He points out that the Rabbanan, if you look in the third line, he says the Rabbanan disagree with Rav Meir and they think that Pilpulin are pater from Arla. Why are they pater? Since they're planted for the sake of drying out, and then you'll use them as a spice or whatever, but it's not meant to be eaten in their moist state. And it's not an tia of an etzmach, meaning it's not a fruit. And there's another machlok about pilpulin. Are they food? Can you buy them Maaser Sheni money? Machlokas. The Rambam paskins that you cannot buy them with Maaser Sheni money. Because Rambam holds not a fruit. Fits very nicely into what the Kabbalist Rambam is trying to suggest. What does Rambam paskin? He says Rambam Meir holds Pilpulin Rechayv and Arla. The Rambam paskins like the Rabbanan, that they're not Chayv and Arla, they're not a fruit at all. So you can't buy them with the Kesef Maaser. According to the Sfas Emes' understanding of the Rambam, Why did the Rambam leave it out? Because it's pasha that it is a fruit. Can you buy them with Kesef Maaser? Absolutely yes. It is a fruit. Even in its moist state, the Kabbalist Rambam is suggesting, you can't buy it with Kesef Maaser with the Shittas Rambam. Umiyu yesh lomar, tahi mayir bepilpulin yaveshim, maybe, you know, how's the Sfas Emes going to understand that Rambam that says that you're not allowed to buy it with Kesef Maaser? Maybe it's talking about if it's already dried out, that you can't buy it with Kesef Maaser, because Kesef Maaser, when it comes to buying something with Maaser Sheni money, so what do I need to do with Maaser Sheni money? What's the rule? What do I need to do? Go to Yerushalayim and spend it on food, right? If I spend it on something that I can't eat, I've wasted my Maaser Sheni money. I did something bad. So it could be that even dried out pilpulin have a din of a pri. Is it a pri? Yes. But can I eat it? No. And if I can't eat it, then that's a misuse of Maaser Sheni money. So the Rambam's saying that you're not allowed, that you can't use Maaser Sheni money to buy pilpulin is not necessarily a raya that he holds that it's not a pri. That it's not subject to Arla. It might still be subject to Arla and still be a pri, but you can't buy the Maaser Sheni money because you're not allowed to eat it. And so that won't work. You've got to like chart this out a little bit. I've got to think of how to make a chart. But again, Kabbalah Smarmi says, but I still maintain the Rambam holds like the Rabbanan, disagree with Rav Meir. They think pilpulin's pashut, not a fruit, not chayiv and arla, and that's why you can't buy it with Maaser Sheni money, even if it's moist. You look about halfway down the page, he says, Lefi zeh, not halfway, about 10 lines in, Lefi zeh, nacha shakta tmias harishonim al ha, should be riff. I typed this up myself, so it's a typo. Al the riff arambam, my amr dal pilpulin lachin yivarech, bo re pri adama. Hilchos brachas. What bracha do you make on it? If it's defined as a pre or pre eitz, chayv and arla. Rambam paskins bar pri adama. How could something be chayv and arla and be bar pri adama? Arla is defined as something that's not a pre. Bar pri adama is for vegetables. It's not shayach. It's a great raya. Great raya. The Rambam must hold that it's not chayv and arla. If it was chayv and arla, it would be bar pri eitz. Everyone asks, what do you mean? Gemara Sukkah Lamanei, Pilpulin Chayv and Arla. How can you say Bar Pri Adama? Says the Kabbalah Smarmi, it's exactly what I'm telling you. The Rambam disagrees with the Gemara Sukkah Lamanei. He thinks the Rabbanan disagree with it. They hold this pot from Arla, and it's like an Elon Shanata Lisiaga Lakaros. It's like planting a tree for the sake of making of having wood to for wood for construction. Where it's not a pre. He says, and based on that, I was able to prove that there's a tshuva in the Rashdam that's wrong. The Rashdam was asked about the following shayla. Do roses, I'm assuming Vered over here means rose, do roses have a din of arla? If you want to eat roses, you ever hear that? Eating roses? Yeah?
Heard of it.
No, do people do it? Is it edible?
Flowers are edible.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, try after Shabbos. So if you're going to eat roses, what? First of all, what bracha do you make on roses? And do roses have a din of arla? So he says, it's totally in the machlokes about pilpulin. If you hold pilpulin, you make a bar priya eitz. So, because you're knowing din arla, he says, well, we know one thing about roses. We know the bracha on roses bar priya dama. So behold that Arla and the Bracha are tali on each other, says the Marash Dam. If you hold that Arla and the Bracha are tali on each other, like most Rishonim would hold, then roses are not chayv in Arla because it's Bar Pi Adama. But if you hold, like the Rambam, says Marash Dam, that pilpulin are Bar Pi Adama, and nevertheless, it's often a Gemara in Sukkah that pilpulin are chayv in Arla. So you see, even though something's Bar Pi Adama, it could still be chayv in Arla, and therefore roses would be chayv in Arla. That's Marash Dam's tshuva. Says it's the Sevz Yom Kippurim, the Kabbalah Tamarim. Wrong. Why is he wrong? You're misreading the Rambam. The Rambam is not saying that pilpulin are chayv and arla. The Rambam thinks that we passing against the Gemara Sukkah Lamed Hei. He passes like the Rabbanan who say pilpulin are pata from arla, and that's why he can get away saying that it's Bar Pri Adama. They're 100% tali zebezeh. There's no way you can make a Bar Pri Adama on something that's chayv and arla. The Rambam holds, therefore, that if you're going to make a bracha bar pri adama on roses, by definition, it's going to be pata from arla. Here's an interesting expression. I've never seen this one. After he quotes Marash Dam, he writes, "Va'achar neshikas yadav ani omer." After I'm done kissing his hands, I say the following. It reminds me of like Lahavdil when Rex Ryan took over the Jets. He said, "I'm not here to kiss Bill Belichick's rings." Va'achar neshikas yadav. And once I'm done kissing his hands, I knew Mary that no, he misunderstood the Rambam and the Riff. You make a Bar Pi Adama because it's not a fruit, it's a pot from Arla. Can you buy roses with Maaser Sheni money? He says, Pashut not. What's the primary use of roses? It's a smell, it's for beauty. Primary use is not as a food. It's totally the Shein Pri is going to be totally in the primary use. So again, it comes back down to that issue. What is a pre? Primary use? Optimal use? That was the third possibility? Or what it is right now? And the rose, you don't have that third possibility because it doesn't change. It doesn't change from being edible to non-edible. Primary use or optimal use? So this primary use is what it is. Happens to be by the rose, it's the same, because even the optimal use. I guess by the rose, you do have the third possibility, right? This is what it is. If you're going to eat a rose, does it make it a fruit? So if you hold it in primary use, no. If you hold it in optimal use, no. The optimal use of a rose is to give to your wife as you know, for Shabbos or whatever. That's the optimal use, not for her to eat. Hungry?
What's the primary use then?
Also, primary use and optimal use of a rose are both for smelling, for beauty, for whatever. Ah, but if you plan on eating it, what am I using it for right now? So it's all tali on those three tzedadim. So he says the Kapsa Tamarim thinks it's davar pashut that it's tali in primary use, or maybe optimal use, but not based on what it is right now. And that's why he doesn't see that pilplin is going to be different when it's dry and when it's moist. He thinks we passing against this, and pilplin dry or moist are always pata from arla. So Asemus also doesn't think it should be tali whether it's dry or it's moist. He thinks. But he thinks the exact opposite. That pilplin are always going to be chayv in arla, dry or moist. Within Tosfos. Within the Rambam. Yeah.
Just like a little bit aside in the roses thing. If you were to eat it and like not purposely smell it, would you still make a brisa reya in terms of the fact that like eating involves a sense of smell? Like you didn't like purposely smell it, like just when you put it in your mouth. But
I don't remember. I think it's spoken about in Shulchan Aruch. Let's go back to that Birchas HaReach shiur. We had a shiur, right? I don't remember if you make a bracha. But I think no. I think when you're eating something, the bracha on the achila is the more powerful bracha, and the pata is the Birchas HaReach. I think that's the
Allah. Even if you smell it first and then you're about to eat it?
I think if you're making the bracha as you're about to eat it, and you're going to smell it in the process, even if it's before the achila, but it's after the bracha, I think the bracha and the achila, pat is everything, I think, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Why would a rose be a fruit more than a vegetable?
That's a good question. Meaning, I don't know what the havamin is to consider it a fruit. I'm not sure. I don't know why one would. A bush, I guess, he thinks it looks more like a tree than it does just like something growing straight from the ground. I don't know. I'm not sure what the happening is to consider it a fruit. But he assumes that you should consider it a fruit unless you have a raya the other way. Otherwise. So even if you hold Bar Biyadama, it could still be a fruit. So then that's what the Marash Dam assumes, at least. He actually talks about Birch Sareach over here. Also, he says, "V'su kashli al Rashdam, the Rasul Omer daliba the Rambam zal bevradim yesh din arla." He wants to tie into that. According to the Rambam, roses have a din of arla. He says, "Ve'ich efshar zeh v'ray ashkan Rambam perktas the brachos dal haverid u'meverid mevarich bori atse b'samim." On a verid, you make a bracha bori atse b'samim. What bracha do you make on a fruit when you smell a fruit? Birch Sareach, something we don't know so well. What bracha do you make on a fruit? Hanosin reach tov b'peros. How can you make bariyatza b'samim if it's a fruit? If it didn't have a fruit, you would say anosin reachtov b'peros. So he says vada, it's not a priest. So that's another rejection of the shita of the Rashdam. Okay, a third possible, again going back a little bit, what's the havamina to assume that pilpulin are pata from arla? So we had Rashi because they're very low. We had Tosfos because you might think that since they ultimately dry out their pater. Ritva quotes a deah that he doesn't like. He has two words to say about it, and that it's eno nachon, but at least he quotes it as a deah that pilplin eno kshar perosh nasim bilin el nasim ke'etz atzmo ke'ensraf oav abuos. That you might think that the pilplin are like, they have a din of sap, that they're not like part of the tree, that they're not like a fruit that grows from the tree, that they're an etzem part of the tree. And they wouldn't have a din of a pri. That might have been the havamina. Comes tell me the pilpulin like little bubbles in the like the trunk of the tree. You would never say, oh, it's a little moisture that bubbled up in the trunk of a tree. That's a fruit. So that's what pilpulin is. It's wood that just bubbles up a little bit. So you might have thought that that's not fruit. That's just a piece of wood. So he says that maybe is the havamina, but then he rejects it. Then he says not true. Okay, one more issue I want to discuss today, and that is the Gemara says on pilpulin, and then we'll be done with pilpulin. So the one issue I want to discuss is The Gemara says, ah, why is it that Pilplin can't possibly be the Pri Etz Hadar? Because lo minkara l'kichasa. Where does it ever say you need minkara l'kichasa? That you need to know, that you need it to be recognizable that you're taking something. As dalad minin. It doesn't say it anywhere in the Torah as far as we know. In fact, this is the only time in Chazal that we have it. Where do we find minkara l'kichasa? Where is that chiyuv? Is that a chiyuv d'oraisa? Has to be d'oraisa. Because the Gemara is saying, you can't, the Pri Etz Hadar can't be Pilplin because lo minkara l'kichasa. If that was only a din d'rabbanan, then sure it could be Pilplin, and then later meet the Rabbanim, they decide that you need Mikra L'Kichasa. Unless you say, no, the Rabbanim wouldn't have had the right to make such a din, to undo a din d'oraisa. Okay, whatever. Where does it come from? Where does Mikra L'Kichasa come from? So, and where it comes from is going to make a big difference in terms of what the nature of the din is. What is, how do you understand Mikra L'Kichasa? Is that a physical thing or a halachic thing? It needs to be recognizable that I'm doing this L'Shem Mitzvah, or which one is my mitzvah, or it needs to be recognizable that I'm holding this item at all, that it's in my hands. How did you understand it?
I need to be able to see it. Like,
you need to be able to see it. Good. That's what... What?
It says to take, so it's like physical.
Ah. So, it, what are you saying? So if I take it and I don't see that I'm taking it, then it's not called taking. That's part of the definition of lekicha. Yeah. Lekachta means take something in a way that it's clear that you're taking it. Yeah.
About the opposite, like you're still taking it just because it's so small.
Ah, so in Lekachtim you think it should be the it should be that I don't need to.
Taking, like,
so where does Minkra come from?
That it's not like I'm not halachic. Like it's not like a, you know, it doesn't have like a shame taking because it's so little. That you are physically taking it.
Ah, so you say that it's a din in... Okay, let me set it up with a nafkamina. Let's set it up this way. And it's not me, it's Rav Yosef Engel in Gileonei Ashas. It's a short Rav Yosef Engel, don't worry. It's a Gileonei Ashas Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel discusses the following case. What if I have two lulavim? One of them is mine, one of them is stolen. I can only be yotzei with one of them. And it's not self-evident when I'm holding them which one is which. So if I hold both lulavim along with Hadas Maravos and an Esrog, do I get the mitzvah? Is that minkara l'kichasa? So no, if minkara l'kichasa means that it has to be physically visible that I'm holding it, well, it is physically visible that I'm holding it, I just don't know which one is which, but it's clearly physically visible that I'm holding something. So that would be minkara l'kichasa. But if minkara l'kichasa means, no, you have to have halachic visibility, meaning it has to be very clear which one, that I'm halachically being yotzei the mitzvah right now, or how I'm halachically being yotzei the mitzvah, the item that I'm halachically being yotzei the mitzvah with has to be self-evident, well then it wouldn't be true, because I don't know which lulav is the real one. It's not self-evident which lulav is the real one when I'm holding it. That's Rav Yosef Engel doesn't say it as a chakira though, he just assumes. He assumes davar pashut, that it would be called lo minkara l'kichasa. I would have assumed davar pashut the other way. I would assume minkara l'kichasa is a physical thing. Does it look like you're holding it? Does not look like you're holding it? If his Vengel assumes, no, minkara l'kichasa is not a physical thing, it's a halachic thing. Is it recognizable which one is the mitzvah? Which one is the real mitzvah? By Pilplin, it's not recognizable which one is the real mitzvah because it's not recognizable that you're holding anything at all. And by two lulavim, it's not recognizable which one is the real mitzvah because one of them is possible and you can't tell the difference. He thinks that's all the same din. I would have said no. I would have said that minkra l'kichasa is din physical. Now, I could say all I want, and he could say all he wants, but where does it come from? So the Kapsa Tamarim suggests that it's based on a medrash. The medrash says, Soveya smachos, the Gemara Darshan, Sheva smachos, as panecha, that you greet HaKadosh Baruch Hu with seven happy things. The seven mitzvos of Chag, which are Dalad Minim Shabalulav, Sukkah, Chagiga, and Simcha. So it sounds like it's a din in Pnei Hashem, in greeting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They have to overtly greet him with the mitzvos. And it's not an overt greeting if the mitzvos aren't nicker. If that's the source, which one is it? So you can maybe go both ways with this. Does overt greeting mean what I view as overt? What I would see, what people would see, that look how I'm greeting the Ribbono Shel Olam, look what kavod I'm giving him? Or does overt greeting mean that Akash Baruch Hu realizes, you know, obviously Akash Baruch Hu realizes, but that, no, it's not a way to say it. You have to say it a little better. Yeah?
Just a question. Wouldn't it be, like, I guess it could be also either way, but it's all based on the shear. Like, it has to be a certain size. So, like, wouldn't that, I guess it could be a physical thing where it's not big enough. Or, it could also be a lach, I don't know. But
you say milkul chasa just means it's less than the shear?
Yeah.
That works if you hold that the shear esrog is really, well, what you hold the shear esrog is all about. Is it a real shear or is it a din in Gemara Pri? Or, but it, over here, it wouldn't even be Gemara Pri. It doesn't sound like it's a din shear. The Gemara doesn't say shear. It doesn't say it's, a pox makes shear. It just says the mikro li
chasa. The way I imagined a plupon was just like really tiny. So like
they
it's
are.
Not big enough to be an esrog. Like,
yeah, but that's the other kasha. That was the other kasha we asked, that how could they have a havamina that's an esrog if there's a shear lachal moshe vizina. So take one of the other and say that, no, the havamina was that pilpulin. If you use an esrog, then you need to have that shear. If you use pilpulin, then you don't need to have that shear. Right, that was one of those
Yerachonis. Gemara says itself, why don't you take two or three? And if you say it's a physical thing, then you could see. And the Gemara doesn't answer that after. It says, oh, it's not a minkur lechichas. So also pick two or
three. Yeah, but two or three that are all kosher. Not one that's possible. Yeah, but you physically and halachically see it. It's clear that I'm holding something with Shem Mitzvah. So it would be both. But maybe tomorrow we'll start with Rav Yosef Engel. He has a very interesting sushtel. He compares it to another area of halacha. Just for like the first 3-4 minutes, we'll discuss Rav Yosef Engel. And maybe a little late tomorrow, because I'm going with the 11th grade to the YU's farm sale. I'm bringing my car, though, to try to get back on time. So B'li Nedra, I'll be on time. But I may, if I'm a little late, don't get nervous. Mirz Hashem, I'll be here. I'll let you know tomorrow morning if Liz Fakhr is speaking to us this week or not. Hopefully I'll let you know tomorrow morning. Let's have a minchah in the